Hello everyone, I am Jessica Saxton, the Environmental Education and Outreach Leader through United Communities AmeriCorps and the host of Living Downstream. Umpqua Watersheds values both human and ecological diversity. We acknowledge that the land upon which Umpqua Watersheds is located was formerly occupied and tended by various indigenous groups, including Cow Creek Umpqua, Coquille, Mulala, and others. Their history is intertwined with this place, and we seek to continue to practice stewardship and reciprocity towards the natural environment which indigenous people did for thousands of years prior to European settlement. We celebrate the strengths and perspectives that different people have to offer, and believe that organizations, communities, and ecosystems are all more resilient when they embrace the unique gifts various individuals can contribute. Welcome to this episode of Living Downstream. I'm your host, Jessica Saxton. Joining me today is Casey Hovick, and we will be interviewing a local band called Face 4 Radio, whose members are Eric Snouts, who does guitars and vocals, and Lowell Smith, who does bass and vocals, and Mark Roster, who does drums. Welcome to the show, guys. Please tell us a little bit about your band and how you came together and started writing songs.
Sure. Well, my name's Lowell Smith. I'm the newest guy to the Roseburg area. And as a always frustrated musician, I started looking around for places to play music. At the time, I was kind of concentrating on playing ukulele. And I heard about this guy who was doing regular open mics around town. That ended up being Eric here. And we met and kind of hit it off and tried a few things. And eventually over time, we decided to start working on some music together. And Eric is friends with Mark from riding. They're both bicyclists. And we all kind of ended up tying together and having a mutual appreciation for genre, you know, kind of classic-ish rock. But we also enjoyed kind of reinventing these songs together too. And we started making up our first set list and deciding to perform. And it was going so well, we finally kind of got inspired to put together some original music. And it went quite well for us. And we ended up going to Wayback Studio, recording our first original tracks together, which just released last month. And we're very proud of that work and looking forward to doing some more.
That's very exciting, Lowell. Why don't you tell us how you got involved in music in the first place? How long you've been playing instruments and writing songs, that kind of thing?
I've been a music fan since I was a toddler. Dad and mom both turned me on to very interesting music. I learned to play the record player by playing Frank Zappa, The Mothers of Invention, and Inagata De Vita by Iron Butterfly, and The Monkees, and all kinds of kind of odd, non-standard sort of music for the day. That and Tchaikovsky and Jefferson Airplane and who knows what else. But started doing music lessons as a kid, as a teenager. I really started to enjoy piano and keyboards because I was a big fan of a few of the keyboardists of the 70s era, like Rick Wakeman and Dennis DeYoung, Keith Emerson, Greg Hawkes, actually, I thought was the keyboardist for the Cars. His support for that band, I thought, was very fascinating, and I really enjoyed what he did. And so around 15, I started writing my first songs on piano. And a long time down the road, that kind of came and went as hobbies and things do. And later in life, after resettling down, took back up to playing music again, but this time decided to play bass because I appreciate a lot of the artists that were in my history and others. So picked up the bass and started enjoying that, being inspired by some of the more, groove-oriented players. Doug Pinnick from King's X is one of my favorites. Not flashy, but tone and placement were always enjoyable for me. And so started joining some bands at that age. And then I moved up here, and that's when I connected with Eric and Mark.
That's really exciting. These connections that we're making in our community and finding so much talent out there and so much different things that are all coming together through our radio station one way and making friends. Eric and I have gotten to know each other over the last couple of months and have really enjoyed listening to him play.
Oh, yeah.
And one of our goals as a radio station and an organization, Umpqua Watersheds, is to provide venues for people, either with the radio station or the new Outback stage that we'll talk about a little later, but to give opportunities to bring people together in our community and enjoy and appreciate all the different talents that we all have that can make our community so much more vibrant. Eric, let's move on to you and talk about your history. How you got involved in music. I know a little about it. I think it's an interesting story, but I'd like each of you to kind of share how you got into music and where you are now.
Well, we only have an hour, so I'll tell the very, very abbreviated version. So I turned 55 last weekend. I had my first guitar lesson when I the week that I turned 13. So you can do the math and figure that it's been a very, very long time that I've been at this. So when I was a high schooler, I took some lessons from a guy who's gone on to some fame. His name is Steve Bennett. He plays harp guitar is again, if you Google his name or whatever, you'll find out a lot of that stuff. But he was doing finger style guitar and bluegrass flat picking and things like that. So I started doing that stuff when I was a teenager. I was also playing electric guitar in a rock and roll band, and because my dad insisted that I had to play in the jazz band as a condition to get an electric guitar, I learned to do that too. So when I went to college, I did a little bit of it. Yeah, it kind of fell by the wayside. After college, I did even less. I went to law school and didn't do much music, but things were kind of reawakened for me in 2003 when I took a classical guitar group class at Pierce College in Los Angeles. There's a guy named John Schneider who's really big in the microtonal circuits. Anyway, John is a he's a just a master of all things guitar, and I was really inspired. So I dug down into renewing my interest in reading music and playing and listening to concert music and that sort of thing. And then we moved here. I call myself a little bit a wash or wait, flat-footed, whatever the right cliche is. I didn't really have people to play with anymore, so I found myself in the open mic scene. I met Lowell and some other, great musicians, and things have really kind of taken off and come together. I do a lot of gigs as a solo guy, just a, me and my guitar sort of thing. So I like to do that. That's all other people's songs, which is fine with me. But really what we're doing with the band is an entirely different creative outlet. As Lowell said, we're taking some of these old classic songs and either reimagining them or mashing them up, but we're kind of mixing and mashing some of the eras and stuff. We might quote a Led Zeppelin song inside of a Green Day song, for example, and it's just quirky and really a lot of fun. And the creativity piece as far as doing original songs has been really, really cool. But Lowell makes it sound like more, it's more of a group inspiration, but the truth is he brought most of what we recorded was, from Lowell's mind, and he shared it with the rest of us, and we kind of hung ornaments on that tree. But there you go.
Well, it's that synchronicity that comes through when you connect the dots with people in your lives, as we're doing right now, of okay, wow, I didn't know, I didn't have this little piece. And this other person is coming together, maybe a large piece that you're able to add and connect. And because of that, things grow and develop. How about you, Mark? Can you tell us more about how you got started as a drummer and musician?
Sure. Always grew up with a lot of music around the house. you know, like quite a number of people went through school band programs starting in fifth grade, partly picked drums because I had an older cousin who was an influence and was playing in bands and playing around. And that also, he lived with us for a year, so we had drums around, that helped. But anyway, stuck with it, you know, the usual concert bands and pep bands, jazz band, stage band, all those kinds of things. Also worked into the usual garage band, rock group sort of a thing, and a number of those over the years. College, also played some in all kinds of different groups, combos. Pretty big into fusion thing there for a while when that was popular. I've played across all kinds of genres, from country to rock to jazz to whatever over the years. Number of people around that I played with for a long time. And then these guys started heading down the road and I jumped on board, and it's been a lot of fun.
Amen. It'd be a lot of fun, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you all for introducing yourself. It's really great to get to hear more about the band, and I've listened to each one of your songs and absolutely love them. So, have you guys been performing live anywhere yet?
We have. Actually, weekend before last, we played at Too Shy in Reedsport.
Road gig.
Yeah, on Friday the 13th of January, we played at North 40 in downtown Roseburg. Looking forward, though, on the 4th of March, we will be at Too Shy here in Roseburg. Can't wait.
Can't wait. Great spot.
Yes, indeed. That'll be fun to hear you play there. We were just at a venue at Too Shy to hear Jonathan Foster play last week. And it's a great brewery, great people there. That really, we're so lucky to have so many breweries. Owners are all wonderful community people from the area, and they bring so many opportunities for bringing people together and performers. So we look forward to hearing you on March 4th at Too Shy.
We look forward to being there.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
So let's talk about the name Face for Radio. How did you come up with it? You guys have more than faces for radio. Tell us a little about the background of the name.
Oh, it's a humorous statement at one level, and we were just kind of enjoying the joke about it, but also the value that some artists put behind. There's several levels, layers to it, if you want to. For example, artists, for being famous for only how their music is as opposed to how they look. And for example, way back in the day, Pink Floyd was kind of pioneering the element of doing entire shows where the players themselves, they're all in the dark. And the show is the music and, you know, whatever theatrics and effects that they decide to bring along, you know. These days, Gorillaz does something very similar. And that's one component of it. But the other one we kind of were talking about, a lot of it's thematic about where people get their information. What is the source where you're getting your information from? A lot of times it's anxiety-inducing information is what we're really referring to. So considering the source is really what it's about, looking at where you're learning your information. Where is it from? Is it viable? Is it, and we try to keep it as at a humorous angle, not grim and, you know, foreboding type of material, which is supposed to be fun so people can, and we can all enjoy it as opposed to worry more about it. This is my dark metal bands are long gone. So trying to relax and enjoy our hair, as it were.
I think it's really interesting how you come up with your first album. It's a digital album. You have five songs. Can you all tell us a little about, you know, the songs that you have on there, the names, and how you collaborated to come up with these songs?
So the first one is Lowell's song. I'll speak to the one that's named Face for Radio because although we all collaborated on these, I brought the seeds of that one to the band. That guitar riff is something that I just think is, I thought it was really cool. And, you know, it was more the tone of the amplifier, I think, that really kind of turned me on to it. And around the time that riff was swirling around in my head, we came up and solidified the name Face for Radio.
Right.
And I started thinking about, you know, one of the things that I tell my kids sometimes is, you know, although I used to have to complain about sitting through commercials, you're really kind of missing out on sitting through commercials and things that you didn't know because you don't have any control over what comes next. So that was kind of what colored some of my inspiration for Face for Radio. The riff, and then a sort of a throwback idea to radio stuff. And, you know, sort of some of the more sinister personalities and things that spread misinformation on the radio too. Again, you can make of it what you like. I don't want to, you know, preclude anyone else's interpretation, but those are some of the things that were spinning around in my head when I came up with it.
Yeah, well, if I can contribute to that a little bit on the song Face the Radio, Eric puts an example of a quote from a famous story. The quote is, "Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain." And that's from Wizard of Oz. That's literally the hidden source of the information behind who is the Wizard of Oz. It's some other person with operating all this machinery in the background. And that's the kind of ideas where we like to work towards theme-wise. Not on every song, but that's the concept of the band anyway, the way we want to approach things.
When you're coming together in something like that, how do you get the drums to fit what they're doing with this song?
Face for Radio is a pretty easy one. Solid riff, that one. Just kind of happen. Pathless Lands got a 3/6 thing going on, so that's not quite your standard 4/4, so that makes it a little more interesting and out of the ordinary. River So Cold, let's just find a groove for it. The Lowell had that bass thing together, kind of got a nice swampy feel to it. The Patch of Blues, another nice, even tempo one there. Signals probably are oddest for drum wise, and maybe for them too. I don't know. It's our instrumental, and it has its tangents there. That one's kind of fun, but any of them, I look at it more play for the song, what enhances the song, or whoever put the most time into writing it, their vision for the song, rather than how can I make more noise?
But and to your you know, eternal credit, you know, the cymbal washes and things in Pathless Land and the some off, you know,
right,
things, you know, really what you can contribute. You make it sound like you just kind of shrug and go along, but you know the truth is that your contribution is really what makes it come together. So I don't sell yourself short, Mark.
Oh, right. You're making me blush over here.
Thank goodness we're on the radio.
Let's listen to Face for Radio.
Thank you.
And that was a segment of Face for Radio. And now back to the questions.
How were you guys able to produce an album so quickly after coming together as a band?
Well, our first gig was, Halloween 2021. And we had such a good time, we decided to start the woodshed considerably. First, originally on, our set of cover tunes. And every time we started picking songs, we would start kind of poking holes in the songs and adding other weird parts or mashing the songs up. And that ended up being so much fun that that was practically, rearranging is a lower level of songwriting, if you think about it. And so songwriting was a natural progression from that point. And it was easy because everyone was having such a good time. And that's what it came down to. And hey, let's try this one. I got this idea now. And introducing those things isn't nearly as worrisome to friends that you have good chemistry with and are already doing odd things with, And so, like Eric was mentioning with Mark's drumming, the chemistry, we've gotten to a point where we're enjoying each other's intuition when we're just playing and jamming. And we have jam tracks, for example, that, wow, that was great. I don't even remember doing that. And we recorded it and we're going to turn that one into a song, so we got more stuff in the works here. But that's having comfort and chemistry with your musical brothers really makes a big difference on comfort in introducing new ideas.
Well, that's really exciting for us to have an opportunity to talk to you about creating music. I'm a big John Prine fan. Yeah. And I saw a old CBS morning or Sunday morning episode they did with him in 2019. Of course, we lost him to COVID in the spring of 2020. Yeah. But he hadn't been in the studio for like, I think, 9 years. And his wife and his son said, okay, we're going to do it. We booked time in the studio. You're going to put out another album. And the way he did his albums is that he would sequester himself in a hotel room for multiple days, and that's all he did was write. And he would do it late at night, so it had room service 24 hours a day while he worked on this. And he would bring in all these suitcases of notes that he had had while he was on the road and working with other performers and ideas where he had for lyrics, and he would bring them all and put them all together to come up with the 10 songs he needed for the album. So I was curious what you all would think about that process. Is that something that makes sense to you, or would that be completely foreign to your way of songwriting?
One of the things that I've tried to figure out is a process for doing this. I don't have suitcases. I generally carry a small composition book that might sometimes be called just a half a page of scribbled lines, to quote a guy. But that's more likely to be the thing than to sort of compile all that other stuff. I think somebody of John Prine's stature kind of occupies a rarefied spot too, because that's what he does. What he did. He wrote these great songs. I really love to play music, but I'm a guy with a job and two kids and a yard to mow and that sort of thing. So I hope to capture those little flashes. The truth, though, is that, as Lowell was saying a few minutes ago, when we come together and sort of start making some sounds that groove, there's a kind of serendipity that comes from that stuff and those meetings. The Signal is a great example of that. And frankly, the way that we fleshed out the other tracks on our EP is a good example of that back and forth sort of thing. So I hope that speaks to your question in a reasonable way.
Indeed. Let's talk more about some of the songs. You all really are bringing people together in a way, and developing a fan base and people that appreciate your music. And it speaks to so much to all of us to be able to listen to your music, because most of us in the backs of our minds wish we could be musicians, for a lot of us. I know I wish I'm a very creative person, but I don't have any musical expertise. So when I go see a band, especially if I'm, you know, friends and listen to them play, it's very inspirational for me to see people be able to do that.
In fairness, it's inspirational when people pay attention and are enthusiastic about what we're doing too. So thank you, Casey.
Yeah. At performances, we get as much out of it as anybody else that's enjoying themselves. So there is a synergy to it that we all kind of need and appreciate too, you know, at the right level.
But while we're talking about synergy, that's what we're trying to do with the KQUA Outback project. We're in the process of building a stage in the back of our parking lot behind the building of Uncle Watershed's and Old Soul Pizza. It'll be the only outdoor stage. And if you think about what the Half Shell has done for Roseburg, we want to do that for downtown Roseburg, to make that area that kind of a small venue that you can get 150 people back there really easily. It'll be covered on each the left and the right side, so people can get out of the weather or the sun. It'll be a covered stage, so our performers will be able to play on there. The acoustics back there, we've had several concerts. It's kind of fun to hear all the music in that space. So what we're trying to do is this: make a community musical garden that we can bring people in and have them showcase their music and bring the community together, and to continue to build this up to make Roseburg and the Umpqua a vibrant place for people to enjoy life. So that's what we're trying to do with the Outback stage. It's going to cost us about $150,000. We're looking for support through various grants that we're writing to support that. We're very lucky that a lot of the materials are already donated for the project. A lot of the labor that it's going to be required to bring the project together is donated. So we have a very large in-kind match for this grant that we're writing. We hope it'll be something that the Oregon Community Foundation will be interested in sponsoring or supporting. It's just the type of project that they would usually fund. So stay tuned. I'm in the process of writing a grant for the Oregon Community Foundation. We also have several people that are writing letters of support, including Experience Roseburg. We're going to be asking UCC for a letter of support. Old Soul Pizza is a partner, including they're the ones that are donating a lot of the labor related to that. Ray Bartram is a dear friend, and he has connections that are going to help us with the labor. My cousin is an architect. He designed the prototype of what we're using for that. So I really look forward to you all, hopefully within the next 9 months, of playing on the Outback stage. It's going to be called the KQUA River Stage, because it's going to have a river mural behind it. That it looks like the North Umpqua. Susan Applegate is going to be doing that for us. So it's going to be a great project, and we'll be able to feature you all and other musicians in our community.
Well, it's a great spot. It's the heart of downtown right there. And that's got to be going to bring a super positive vibe. I think it's great that you guys are putting that together. And we'd be happy to be part of it.
Well, it's going to be fun. So I'll turn it back over to Jess. We've got a lot to talk about. We want to focus on your music and then give you guys more opportunity to talk.
So do you guys want to talk a little bit about how you came to create Pathless Land and what inspired you to make that song?
Oh, sure. I wrote Pathless Land actually before I met these guys. It was in a very different form. I wrote it on ukulele. As I mentioned, I was kind of founding in that area for a while. And the song kind of came during a lot of political turmoil, and everyone having these polarized arguments, I felt that that was very tragic. And everyone wanted to be right, and it didn't matter what seemed to be true. And that's kind of what that song was about. And it was, what would you call it? It was kind of addressing an individual, maybe. It doesn't matter politically which extreme they're on, in my opinion, for the song. But the idea is some people are loyal to a party or a dogma, and the truth doesn't seem to necessarily be a foundation to that element. And the idea is, the idea hopefully is loyalty to the truth, and on the opposite side of that is, it's okay to say that you don't know the answer. It's, in fact, it's important, and that's more truthful than, having somebody else's opinion. It's better for us. It's more healthy to admit we don't know, and then you can explore together as opposed to being stuck in this dogmatic argument that just gets you spinning and chasing your tail. And that's kind of what the song's about.
That sounds like a great song. We look forward to listening to that. And during these divisive times, we need to look for the greatest common denominator, and that's community. And one of the things, as we've talked today about, is that music is one of those common denominators that can bring people together, forget about politics, whatever separates us. And for the moment, we live in this space. So let's listen to A Pathless Land.
Set in your way, safe and so unreachable. Looking right through me as I reach out. Locked inside your head without any doubt. Taught from the mark that you have no chance. Hook, line and sinker, less a trap, more like romance. Blinders are tailored to accommodate. Following lies left behind by the gods you made. Point towards the truth, there at my finger. All fast lead away from the place you should linger. Stuck inside a loop. Who figured at the end of the day you could find your own way? Point towards the truth, there at my finger. All fast lead away from the place you should linger. Stuck inside a loop. Who figured that
The title, by the way, the title Pathless Land is from a philosopher I started reading around that same time frame, is a thinker named Jiddu Krishnamurti. And he was saying, truth is a pathless land. And that was kind of the idea. As soon as you start trying to apply dogma to something so important, then you kind of derail your mission in a lot of cases, your mission of improving things.
Thank you. What inspired A River So Cold?
I'll give you one guess. River So Cold was the North Umpqua River. And that all started becoming an inspiration on deciding to move here. We were exploring Oregon from the Southwest and stopped up and decided to explore up the North Umpqua, camped up on the river, and fell in love and said, why were we in this very brown area that we used to live? You know, there's so much life up here. And started to fall in love with it. And we also learned that that river is very potent as far as costing people their lives sometimes when they're not paying attention to its capabilities, because it's, we heard some tragedies also, and it's such a beautiful and hypnotic river that is something you have to respect. Otherwise you can get caught up in it as well. And that's kind of what that song's about. It's about loving it, but understanding your place with it.
Thank you. That's very beautiful. The waters can be very dangerous, yet very pristine and gorgeous. Let's listen to River So Cold.
Up the road in the West Cascades, yeah. Two bodies forever struggling, an icy vein rolling down through the haze. You can hear her whisper beckoning, a change in elevation gave me more than I bargained for. She always gives it up, but then sometimes she takes a little bit more. You'll know where to find me.
Down by the river.
Out
so
in
cold.
That dark North Umpqua winter.
Down by the water.
Oh, won't you please lay me
down by the river so cold.
Emerald serpentine, seductive and lethal, and she's hungry to take your heat away. But if you look into those midnight eyes, I will assure you that you wouldn't want it any other way. And the change in elevation gave me more than I bargained for. She always gives it up, and then sometimes she takes a little bit more. You'll know where to find me.
Down by the river.
Out
so
in that dark North Umpqua winter.
Down by the water.
Oh, won't you please lay me
down by the river so cold.
That was A River So Cold. And now let's listen to a segment from A Patch of Blue. Now we're going to talk about The Patch of Blue. How did you guys come about to create that song?
Patch of Blue, I also, that original riff was kind of based on some other work I did that never got finished. And since I found the right people to work with, they, Mark and Eric, brought that to life. And once we brought the riff to life, the introductory riff to the song, the words just fell right into it. And it's about valuing a person's importance in your long-term relationship together and what they mean to me in this case. Yeah. So how valuable they are helping you stay centered and positive.
I would just say that's a really nice chord progression to play. Mm-hmm. I think my contribution to that more than anything was, you know, finding what I thought was a sound that sounded something like an organ coming from my guitar, you know, and the song is just so sweet, you know, that sort of thing seemed to really flesh it out. And I appreciate it, you know, as a platform to put those additional elements on. And I mean, really, the drumming that Mark does in that song, I mean, there's an instrumental break that's essentially a drum break. And I just think it's just genius. And the way that he moves things along, it's really nice. I feel like we've spoken a whole lot, Mark, and as is your way, you're back there quietly holding down the fort.
Counting to four.
Yeah, sorry, Mark, but that drum break to me was expressing a solid foundation. That was kind of the idea in the song, as far as, you know, a relationship goes. And Mark just tied into it and found this special spot. And so that's a very enjoyable part for me, for sure. Mark's work there.
Thank you.
Let's listen to The Signal.
And so moving on to your guys' last song, The Signal, what inspired this one?
So if you look at that logo, the one that's on the sticker, the one that's on the album cover, there's a little alien guy, and looks like above his head is a radio tower. So whether that signal is coming from a radio tower or coming from some far-flung quadrant of space, I like the idea of calling it the signal. I think I'm putting the cart before the horse, though. Really, we came up with the groove, one of those moments where we were just warming up. And somebody said, hey, see if you can do something. And I started playing that little jangly guitar riff at the start of it. And it just sort of went from there to a couple of other variations. And we strung them all together and turned them into a fun little instrumental. That one was a lot of fun to play. There's some moments in the recording where it seems like things get a little bit out of sync, but I think we brought it back together. We recorded that one live. In fact, we didn't do any overdubs, no solo overdubs or anything like that in the studio. I think we did a couple takes, but it was what you hear there is what we actually played. So I don't know if that gives you a lot of information about the inspiration, the process. We got together and we started playing and it came together. How's that?
I would add on that one, I still kind of remember the first time we put it together and it was close to what it would become, just kind of getting to the end of it and thinking, and I think maybe all of us is like, what was that? What just happened? kind of out of the air someplace or something. Yeah. But.
Right.
I totally agree, Mark.
So do you guys mind if I ask, what made you decide to do an album rather than put out singles?
Well, we're going to have to pay for the studio space. we're going to have to pay for the production of the, we did print some CDs, although it's mostly a digital product. Seems to me to make more sense to give people a flavor of, you know, what we do. And I like to think that those five tracks are pretty eclectic. So in terms of doing a single as opposed to an EP or an album, you know, there's also this sort of critical mass idea as well. You know, what one song wouldn't have really been enough to go to the studio or to do a CD.
So tell us a little about that studio process. How long were you in the studio? Where was the studio? And how that all worked out?
It's local. The guys from the band Widespread Haze have kind of opened up a studio thing, Wayback Studio, and we guinea pig there a little bit, and they have a very nice setup and a wonderful room, and were patient with us, and we did it over. We did all the instrumental stuff basically in one kind of longish day. And then went back and did vocals and maybe a couple of guitar things afterwards, if I remember correctly. And then, you know, it was a while. They helped mix it down for us, and we went through that process and made suggestions. But they were very on board with us and helpful and walked us through the process very nicely.
It was mastered by Steve Tunbridge in Ultraviolet Studios in Seattle, Washington. What does that mean? What does mastering the album mean?
So the guys at Wayback Studios here in Roseburg did all of the sort of hands-on creative work. You know, they placed the microphones in the right spot. They chose the right microphones for the right application. You know, they put us behind isolating blankets and those sorts of things, and did a fantastic job of recording the sounds that we were making. So the idea behind mastering is it's a little bit more production. Steve kind of gave some unity to the volume levels and to the transitions. You know, there's some artful choices in terms of how much time there is between the tracks and those sorts of things. it's just sort of another set of ears on the project, but with those specific goals, you know, give it some continuity, give it some, put the breathing spaces in the right place, and that sort of thing. I always speak in terms of analogies. I can't think of any way to explain it, but other than just to say, you know, he's an additional producer.
The way that Wayback took Eric's guitar, found the right colors for it, the right equalization, the right tone, and did this to each of the components of the song, the guitar, the vocals, Mark's drums, the bass, etc. once they had pastiched those into one song, Steve takes that song and treats it the way they were treating each individual component and kind of glues it all into one item.
Very interesting. Regarding Widespread Haze, they have a connection to Umpqua Watersheds and going way back in, I believe it was 2018, we had Lance Canales here for a performance on the Outback stage. We just have a small stage back there. And several of the future members of Widespread Haze were there. And after the concert, they went back together over and had a jam session at their apartment, which was a couple blocks from Umpqua Watersheds. And that led to them becoming Widespread Haze. And they played at our membership banquet last May. So we're big fans of Widespread Haze, as we are big fans of Faith for Radio. Very excited to see what you all are doing and to get you all and all the other musicians involved in KQUA and building it as a platform for our community, bringing people together. What we envision is maybe even having a studio in our building where we can bring in musicians, or in a place working with Umpqua Community College where we can bring in people and create this garden that people, community music garden, that people can come together and create music and in a way that it's affordable, because it's got to be pretty expensive to do what you're doing, and to make it fun so that you all can continue maybe doing this as a vocation down the road. You're so talented and would love to be able to support you in any way that we can.
Well, we appreciate the support that KQUA and that you have, you know, shown us to date, you know, and your support for the music and the community sort of writ large is it's a great thing, and you know, we all benefit from that. So thank you very much.
Well, it's about relationships too. There's right from the beginning, the first time I ever met you, Eric, we connected. I know your uncle, you know, we have that community connection, and already just spending an hour together tonight, I can see all of us are going to be friends, and it's exciting to see what we can do. And it, you know, like I said before, it's inspirational what you've done on this first album, of, you know, creating these five songs, and now you have a digital album that people can go out and buy. Can you tell us a little about that?
Sure. We are on all the major platforms, I believe, at this point. I don't know if we're missing one. Spotify, CD Baby, Apple Music, all those. We do have, if you see us live, we do have, and you like physical copies, we do have some actual physical CDs available as well. $4 for the digital. That's what I know.
What's the future look like as far as the next album? Is that something you're working on, or you're, you know, a year from now, or like John Prine, is it 9 years from now? Do you have a goal for coming up with some more music?
Well, we already have three songs in progress, and we're intending on doing another batch. And, you know, we'll woodshed as we do, and the songs have to be right to put them down. So it doesn't seem like many barriers to having another batch of songs within the year. Kind of a tentative goal is to try and hit the studio again by this coming September. That's just the goal. We want the songs to be good first, and we'll go based off of those. And we already have some fun ideas that we're all already kind of enjoying and cultivating at this point.
Another vision that we have for the radio station is to do something that Cities 97 in Minneapolis did, where they would bring in, you know, artists into the studio, and they would play a song and they'd talk about the song. But they'd do that every week, and then at the end of the year they'd do a compilation CD and get, and it would go to support charity. You know, so they'd sell the CD. There'd be 10 or 12 albums. You can go on the internet and Cities 97 Minneapolis and probably find it. But I always, it was always a big thing for a lot of people when those compilations would come out. They'd release them right before Christmas, and there'd be big lines for people to get these CDs that would have all the, you know, a lot of the really major artists in the country on these that would come into Cities 97. Right. And what our vision is, once we get this full power station up, you know, down the road, hopefully no more than a year from now, would be able to have studio sessions with our local musicians, come in and play original songs, and then work with you all to maybe do a compilation album that we could release, you know, one of your songs along with the other people in the community to raise funds for causes. You know, we have a lot of causes that are important in Roseburg, and to have something to bring music together to address those issues would be fun.
I couldn't agree more. It sounds like a lot of fun. It sounds like a good way to engage in the community and share.
Exactly. And that's what we're all trying to do, is that in this time, everyone talks about all the challenges, and these are very dark and challenging times, but there's so much potential for people coming together and doing things together and adding light to our community. And that's what you all are doing. And thank you so much for the light that you're adding to our community through your music.
Well, we appreciate that. And we're glad to be here, and we're glad to be doing what we're doing. And we're very thankful that you guys are the resource you are to this community, not just for music wise, but for the ecological message you guys represent. And we really appreciate that.
Thank you very much. Any last comments, anybody else? Any last thing you want to mention?
If you would have told my 15-year-old self that I'd still be doing, well, first, that I would be this old, that much not a 15-year-old self. But if you would have told my 15-year-old self that I would still be playing in bands and having fun doing this at this age, I think he would have been pretty happy with that.
Right on.
Amen.
I really appreciate having you guys on the show and look forward to seeing your guys' progress and watching you live here in town. So thank you for being on Living Downstream. And thank you, listeners, for catching this episode of Living Downstream.
Thanks, everybody.
Hey, thanks a whole bunch for having us, you guys. This was really a pleasure.